Just a few brief comments before we get started in chapter 10 with the text itself. Chapter 7, 8, and 9, the book is divided into two parts where you've got kind of the historical account of Daniel's life. That's chapters 1 through 6. And then chapters 7 through 12 focus on the prophetic life of Daniel. So chapters 7, 8, and 9, we've noticed that they kind of stood alone. Chapter 7 was its own prophecy, chapter 8 was its own prophecy, and chapter 9 was its own prophecy. But when you come to chapters 10, 11, and 12, all of those are combined to be one single prophecy. It's kind of broken down like this. Chapter 10 is the introduction. It's where this spiritual being comes to Daniel and causes him a great deal of dismay and a great deal of fear with his presence. But he comes and he makes known this revelation that Daniel is going to receive. And chapter 11 really breaks down and gives a lot of detail. You may have looked, if you've looked ahead or if you've read through Daniel before, chapter 11 is a pretty long chapter. It's 45 verses. And that is the body of the vision that Daniel receives from the spiritual being. And just in a nutshell, it gives a lot of detail regarding two nations, as it refers to them, the king of the south and the king of the north. What it's actually describing, and we'll talk about it in more detail when we get there, are goings on between two different, that's one nation, it's the nation of Greece. But you may remember when Alexander the Great died that Greece was broken down and divided into four different territories. But primarily chapter 11 is a vision concerning the king of the south, which is the Ptolemaic dynasty, and the king of the north, which is the Seleucid dynasty. And the reason that's significant and the reason it's found its way in the book of Daniel is because geographically, if you're aware of where all of these things are taking place, Jerusalem is smack dab right there in between the two. And so these civil wars that are taking place and this unrest that's taking place between the Seleucid and the Ptolemaic dynasty, Israel's right there in the middle of it. And as a result of it, they're going to see a lot of the effects, and there's going to be a lot of impact between these two nations that's taking place on Israel. And so a lot of that's really dictated and described for us in more accuracy. And if you go back to chapter 8, what we're going to find out is it's rehashing a lot of things that chapter 8 talked about. So we'll be able to move through that chapter, I think, a little more quickly. But it talks about the arrival of Antiochus Epiphanes and the dread that he's going to bring upon the Judeans and all of those things. And the book concludes in chapter 12 where the angel tells Daniel to seal up the scroll and all of these things, and that's how things end. So much of this revelation we've covered, but we're going to be able to look in a little more detail when we get to chapter 11 most especially. But we're going to focus our time on chapter 10 this morning. I don't think we'll be here more than a week and a half. Probably. It's a relatively short chapter, so we'll try to move through this at a good pace and yet cover the things that are significant and relevant and helpful for us. So I'd like to just start by looking at the first nine verses. Buster, would you mind reading that for us, please? All right, so Daniel does, as he has all of the other visions, he prefaces the vision that he's going to describe by saying when it was he received the revelation. So when was it that this vision was made known to Daniel? It tells us in verse 1. Okay, who was king? Okay, Cyrus was king, and it was in the third year of the reign of Cyrus. Now, stop and think. What's the significance of Cyrus and the role that he played in the history of the Jews? Okay. He's the one that gave forth the edict that allowed the Jews to return home to begin rebuilding the city of Jerusalem and its walls and such as that. Now you'll remember chapter 9. Chapter 9 was Daniel's questioning and pondering, when are the Jews going to get to go home? And we know how that vision was made known to Daniel, and not just the Jews return home, but really the fate of the Jews that was going to culminate, as we know, with their destruction, the destruction of Jerusalem. But more significantly, the restoration of the people, not just the Jews, but God's people in general, everlasting atonement and everlasting righteousness was going to be brought in, and that was going to be accomplished through Jesus, we understand. That was foretelling Jesus' death and the destruction of the Jews and really how God was going to renew his people and bring in forgiveness that had not been known. But as James had said, Cyrus was the king that sent forth the edict that allowed the Jews to return home. If you look at Daniel's mannerisms here, when you read the first part of this, Daniel seems to be in quite obvious distress. And it's not really what you would expect from a man who had should be celebrating that his people were able to return home. They've been gone for 70 years, but it seems that the favor of the Lord is back in the life of his people, and that they're sent back to Jerusalem. It's being rebuilt. The temple's going to be remade. They're going to be able to worship God, and everything seems to be kind of falling into place. Yet Daniel has a very disgruntled and bothered attitude about all this taking place. And just to kind of give you an idea of when this is, Daniel's probably about 82 years old. This would be pretty close to the time when he's going to be cast into the lion's den, that he receives this particular vision here. So I put the questions on the back of the table, and I think they've been there for 2 or 3 weeks. I've just never said anything. So some of you may have grabbed those on the way out. If not, you may grab a copy on the way out. But there's a handful of questions we want to consider throughout the course of this chapter. And I'd like to just look at the first one right now and consider that for a moment. Why was Daniel fasting in verses 2 and 3?
Because of the things he saw in the
future. Okay. Okay. So we see that verse 1 says he understood the message and he understood the vision. And the vision is essentially going to tell of what's going to happen to the Jews, and most specifically the great persecution under Antiochus Epiphanes. Understanding that will really let the air out of them. Despite the fact that the people were back home and the walls being rebuilt and the temples being restored, knowing that such dread is going to come upon his people, it would be depressing and it would be very bothersome. And obviously that's part of what I believe is really affecting Daniel so negatively at this moment. He understood the vision. He understood what was to come. Can you think of anything else? You think about the interpretation of the vision. They're going to be stuck in the middle of this civil war that's going to be taking place for 100 years or better anyway. And the impact of that on the people is not going to be one that's very pleasant. Eventually, Antiochus Epiphanes is going to arise from the Greek kingdom and persecute Israel. And so, like Tommy said, Daniel's understanding of what was going to happen in the future for his people, despite the fact he wasn't going to see it, knowing what would happen to God's people, he was very troubled by it and he was very bothered by it. And it has him in this very dark, depressed mood. And so there's dark days ahead for Israel. And I really think you understand the significance of Daniel's displeasure at this point. If you look at verse 4, it says it was on the 24th day, and remember, Daniel had been fasting for 3 weeks, verse 3 tells us. On the 24th day of the first month, tells us that was when all of this took place. You know, if you go back and you look at the calendar of the Jews, what you find out is that was during the days of the Passover feast. The Passover feast, no need for us to talk about that, symbolized God's deliverance from Egypt and symbolized God's protection and God's care and love for his people. And so for Daniel to have fasted and to have withheld from himself the Passover feast, that great celebration that all of the Jews once a year would commemorate, really tells you the attitude and helps you see how truly bothered Daniel was by what he had witnessed, by what he knew was going to come upon God's people, so much so that he fasted throughout the period of the Passover feast. And so as this fast comes to an end, he witnesses this vision. Think for a moment. Consider, describe the man, and that's how Daniel seems to describe him. He says he looked it up and saw a man dressed in linen. Describe the man that Daniel sees in this vision. What are some of the characteristics that we just read about that he possessed?
His eyes like torches of fire.
Okay, that really stands out. Several characteristics we might have realized. We see that he was dressed in linen. Now you stop and you think about that for a moment. Linen was something that was worn by priests. It was a garment of white. And so it was garments worn by priests and worn by angels, probably symbolic of the purity that they were to have. Not only that, but his waist was girded with a golden belt, a belt of pure gold. Only the wealthy wore material such as this. And so it becomes pretty obvious to Daniel that he's not dealing with just a conversation between him and another man. Rather, there's something unique about this individual that appears to him, this ambassador of God. It says he had a body like beryl. Beryl is a fine gemstone. You go and you read about the various gems in Revelation. Beryl is often one of the gems that's mentioned there to describe heaven or the New Jerusalem. His face was as lightning. His eyes were like flaming torches. His arms and feet of polished bronze. And if you look at those four descriptions there, very luminescent is, I think, the idea that Daniel's trying to get across to the readers of this vision. And so some have postulated, some have thought, well, this is Daniel describing exactly what it is angels look like. I wouldn't go as far to say that. Angels are spiritual beings, so what form they truly take, we don't know. Daniel is doing the best he can, and that's kind of the purpose of symbolic language. You can't really explain what it is you're seeing, but you're trying to just communicate it in as effective a way as you can. And he's trying to explain something spiritual in physical terms, and so he uses this language. And so whether angels really do appear with this odd description, and that's what they look like, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But I think Daniel's trying to help us understand the luminescent, shining, glowing that accompanied this angels. And you think those who have encountered God from time to time, they seem to possess the same luminescence. You remember Moses whenever he came down from the mountain after receiving the Ten Commandments, how his face was glowing so much so he had to put on a veil to cover up the brightness of his face when he was back among the people. And so you kind of gather that someone who is in the presence of God possesses this shining, this luminescence from being there in God's presence. And I think that that's indicative of the fact that this angel somehow or another stood in the presence of God or in the company of God and now is here to bring this message to Daniel. Said his voice was like a tumult. He didn't sound like an ordinary man. And you go and you look at the original word for this. It's translated in different ways. It's sometimes used to describe the sound of his voice was like the sound of the sea, you know, and we just got back from Orange Beach, and you know, if you're there or you're at the sea, you just hear the waves. There's just a constant pounding. It never stops, and it's always there, and you can hear it from up in the condo, or you can hear it from far away because that's the power of the waves hitting the beach time and time again. It's used to describe the sound of an army as it's traveling. It's used to describe rain falling, the murmur of a crowded city. You ever been to a football game or a concert and you've just, you know, nothing's going on, nothing's taking place. The crowd is just kind of talking amongst themselves and you can hear just this low grumble, but you can't really distinguish any sound. That's what Daniel's trying to say. His voice was like a tumult. His voice was like a multitude. It wasn't like that of an ordinary man. And all of these various attributes of this angel are going to have an impact on Daniel here in just a moment that we're going to see. And so you can't help but wonder, who is this spiritual being that appears to Daniel? Some have thought, well, maybe it's Gabriel. You go back and you see Gabriel was the messenger in chapters 8 and 9. He was the one that came to Daniel and made known this revelation. So some have said, well, this is Gabriel. Others have said this is Jesus. That the description here that we have of this angel, and then you go and you read in Revelation 1 where Jesus is described, there's a lot of similarity between what we read about in Daniel 10 and Jesus as he's described for us in the book of Revelation. Personally, I don't hold to that view. I do agree that, yes, there are some similarities, probably more so due to the fact both of them are spiritual beings that are being witnessed and described in human terms. But we'll see a little bit later as we read through the text evidence that this, it wouldn't make sense for this spiritual being that comes to Jesus, that comes to Daniel and speaks to him. It doesn't seem like it'd be Jesus. So you look at this, what impact, what effect did this have on Daniel when he witnessed the spiritual being coming with this message for him? Okay, he gets weak. And it's kind of also interesting to see that Daniel, although he was there, he had these attendants that were there with him, and they couldn't see what was going on. They couldn't witness with the spiritual eye what it was Daniel saw, yet they knew something was taking place. So much so, he says, he describes, I think it's verse 7, he says, those who were with me, they didn't see anything, they didn't see the vision, nevertheless a great dread fell on them and they ran away to hide themselves. Can you think of any other instances in the Bible where a spiritual being's present was noticed by others that couldn't see it, particularly in the New Testament? Okay. He's on the road to Damascus, and there says there were some men with him. It said they could see a light. Paul witnessed some kind of encounter with Jesus where Jesus was speaking to him, but they saw a light. They couldn't distinguish anything other than that. They knew something significant was taking place, but they weren't able to see what it was that Saul witnessed. And that's kind of the case here, that Daniel has his attendants. Daniel witnesses this vision, and he sees this spiritual being. And the other people, they can determine and they can tell that something strange is going on based off of this great feeling of dread that fell upon them. And they weren't able to see anything, but they left Daniel and they just kind of ran away. And so this encounter that Daniel had with the spiritual being, it drains him of his strength and it drains him of his courage. So let's read a little bit more, verses 10 through 17. Jimmy Dale, would you mind reading that for us, please?
Suddenly a hand touched me, which made me tremble on my knees and on the palms of my hands. And he said to me, O Daniel, man greatly loved, understand the words that I speak to you and stand upright, for I have now been sent to you. While he was speaking this word to me, I stood trembling. Then he said to me, do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come because of your words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days, and behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to me, for I had been left alone there with the kings of Persia. Now I have come to make you understand what will happen to your people in the last days. For the vision refers to many days yet to come. When he had spoken such words to me, I turned my face toward the ground and became speechless. And suddenly one having the likeness of the sons of men touched my lips, and I opened my mouth and spoke, saying to him who stood before me, my Lord, because of the vision my sorrows have overwhelmed me, and I have retained no strength. For how can this servant of my Lord talk with you, my Lord? As for me, no strength remains in me now, nor is any breath left in me.
Before we really start this, I should have asked before. Any comments, any questions on the first 9 verses that we looked at? So we see here this encounter that Daniel has with the angel. 3 times, in verses 10, 16, and 18, we see that this angel reaches out and touches Daniel. And I previously asked in one of the questions, Tommy had said, what was the effect of this angel's appearance on Daniel? And we see that it was overwhelming fear. It was overwhelming dread. His courage was taken from him. It's 3 times during this encounter. Daniel faints throughout the course of this vision being revealed to him. And it says 3 times the angel reaches out, touches him. And you'll remember one of the attributes of angels, as it appears, they have the ability to strengthen someone miraculously in an appearance. Jesus on the mountain after 40 days of fasting, after Satan being dealt with and Satan departing, remember, it says angels came to him strengthening him. And you go and you read Jesus is there in the garden as he's just drained emotionally and physically. It says that the angel was there with him strengthening him. And so it appears that angels have this unique ability to strengthen those that are weakened. Particularly, I believe we see this angel being the source of what causes Daniel, in a sense, to be weakened. What are some other things, though? Because he faints 3 times, it's obvious Daniel's very distressed. What do you think some more reasons for Daniel's fainting might be?
He's been fasting.
Okay. Been fasting for 3 weeks, I think it said. I don't know if I'd be able to have just a lot of constitution either if I'd been that long withholding food and water for myself for the most part. You also think about the fact Daniel's not a spring chicken, is he? He's 82 years old. And so for even a person who would be in good health relatively, the fact that Daniel is 80 years old and he's been without food, that could be a large part of the reason why he just can't stay on his feet. He just can't keep his strength. He's not been nourished. He's not had water. He's there, verse 7, in the presence of this very powerful, obvious spiritual being, a being that's caused these other people to run away in dread. And here Daniel's this old man in front of this angel. It's no wonder that he continues to faint time and time again. You think about the fact that fear probably as well is overwhelming him. He understands what's going to be taking place. He understands the significance of the vision the angel tells him. He understands the content that the angel's going to reveal. Remember, he's already seen a vision that's told about what's coming upon the Jews. And so he has, in a sense, some foreknowledge of what it is or the people are going to go through. The sound of the voice of the angel, like a multitude of waters, each time throughout this occasion, Daniel faints, the angel touches him, and the angel strengthens him. And he stops and he offers him these various encouragements because he needs Daniel to understand what it is he's trying to convey. In verse 11, he says he refers to Daniel as a man of high esteem. In verse 12, he tells Daniel, don't be afraid. In verse 19, he tells Daniel to take courage. And so he needs Daniel to be awake and aware and cognizant of what's going to be taking place because the message that he's got is going to be very significant for Daniel to record and remember and preserve. Let's take just a moment and make a little bit of application here. The significance and the purpose of Daniel's vision was for the angel to impart wisdom and to impart understanding on Daniel. So where does wisdom come from? Okay. Comes from God. Ultimately, that's where it comes from. We might say it comes through the result of our own experience. You live, you learn, you make mistakes, you realize you don't need to do this or you don't need to do that or it didn't work out for you. And so through experience, wisdom comes. It occurs when we watch others and see how they live and see their decisions and how it impacts their life. And so maybe we can avoid making those same mistakes ourselves. And ultimately, as James said, and also, as James, the brother of Jesus, wrote in James 1, wisdom comes from God. You know, verse 12, I think, is significant in helping us to understand. As Daniel, in this instance, is seeking to obtain wisdom, wisdom is something that we should be searching after as well, as Christians, as God's people. And you go and you read the book of Proverbs, and you find out that wisdom wants to be found, and wisdom's value is priceless. And wisdom is something that we, as God's people, should have. But when it comes to obtaining wisdom and understanding, I think there's a couple things that we can practically gain here from Daniel's encounter with this angel. Verse 12 makes this statement as the angel speaking to Daniel. He says, from the first day that you set your heart on understanding this and on humbling yourself before God, your words were heard and I've come in response to your words. So Daniel's going to receive this wisdom and this understanding because he set his heart to understand. And he humbled himself before God. And it's then, after he did those two things, that his words were heard. Wisdom isn't something that's miraculously given. I think perhaps some of us may think that, well, you just live life and it's something you accumulate naturally. It is, but at the same time, it's a gift from God. And it's given to those who ask. And as with all blessings of God that are in our life, it's something that we ask God for. And then God, in turn, respond with. But it isn't just asking God. It's more than that. You look at what Daniel did. It says he set his heart on understanding. And I think sometimes when we pray for wisdom, we don't do anything. We don't put in what is expected of us to be given that wisdom. And so we may pray for wisdom, but we don't bother reading our Bible anymore. We don't bother thinking about God's Word. We don't bother meditating on God's Word. We don't bother on a applying what it is we've witnessed and experienced through life. And so we may pray for wisdom, and we think perhaps just miraculously God's going to give it to us, and we'll wake up one day and we'll be wise all of a sudden. And that's not what it means, and that's not how it's accomplished. Daniel receives this understanding because it said he set his heart to understand God's will. Now that involves an active effort on my part and on your part. And so we have to set our heart, just like Daniel did, on understanding God's will. Reading, studying, meditating, praying. All of those are things that we do in our desire for wisdom. And in response to that, God will give. But we have a responsibility in that request as well. And as you search for wisdom, as you desire wisdom, you need to humble yourself. Humility is one of the things that allows us and brings us to wisdom. So with the result being of setting our heart on, seeking understanding, and humbling ourselves before God, just as God gave Daniel wisdom, if we do the same things, God will give us wisdom as well as we seek to obtain both wisdom and understanding. You may have noticed a new character here that we're introduced to, one that we haven't witnessed before. And that is the Prince of Persia. Some of you maybe have read the book or seen the movie. I think it's a book as well. But there's a movie that's called The Prince of Persia. I don't think it's just real popular, but you may have heard of it or may have seen it advertised. But you know, it's absolutely nothing historical regarding the account of Daniel. It's an actual man. As you read about the Prince of Persia here, you get a very brief glimpse, I believe, into the spiritual realm. And as you read this, you really find yourself, at least I did, find myself asking more questions than I did actually having answers as I read through this and as I thought about this. You know, verse 13 refers to a messenger, the Prince of Persia, the Prince of the Kingdom of Persia. This angel says, withstood me for 21 days. Some have thought, well, this is referring to a man. First off, we need to understand, I don't know how in the world a man could withstand or restrain an angel from a goal that he wanted, a place he had to go, or something that he had to do. And so it doesn't make a lot of sense for, although yes, I know this is human terminology, it doesn't make a lot of sense for the Prince of Persia that's withstanding this angel that's going to Daniel to give this wisdom and this understanding. It doesn't make any sense for it to be referring to a man. Let's just consider a few basic facts. Well, verse 20 tells us that spiritually there are things taking place that we just don't understand and we just don't know about. And we haven't read this yet, but you read verse 20, and this angel that's speaking to Daniel says, do you not understand why I came to you? I shall return now to fight against the Prince of Persia. And so this angel is going to go to war with the Prince of Persia. So I'm going forth, and behold, the Prince of Greece is about to come. So there's some very obvious spiritual things that are taking place that Daniel isn't able to witness. Daniel isn't able to see in the spiritual realm. And you go to Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 12. Paul makes a similar argument where he says, Galatians 6:12. He says, our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but our struggle is against rulers, against powers, against world forces of the darkness, against spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. And so he seems to allude there that while, yes, our troubles are manifested by difficulties and temptations in this physical body and in this physical world, there seem to be motivating factors and forces behind what it is we struggle against. And he says our struggle is not against flesh and blood. It's against all of these spiritual powers and these spiritual forces and forces of darkness. And so we kind of get the sense in reading Daniel 10 that there's some sort of spiritual war or spiritual events that are taking place of which we simply have no knowledge. But here for just a moment, we're able to get a glimpse into what's taking place behind the scenes spiritually. And what we see is the spiritual warfare, spiritual goings on, as we considered with our angels class, I believe they impact things in this physical world, or at least in the time of Daniel, as he records this, they did. You read chapter 11 and verse 1, this angel is speaking, and this angel says, in the first year of Darius the Mede, I arose to be an encouragement and protection to him. And so you got this angel that's kind of working behind the scenes with Darius the Mede. And you'll remember Darius the Mede was the one who went to war with the Babylonians. He was the one who took the throne after Belshazzar. was killed after the Babylonians lost their kingdom and lost their place. And this angel says, in the first year of Darius the Mede, I was a strength and I was an encouragement to him. So this spiritual influence appears to make its way to this physical manifestation where it impacts things that are taking place in our world. Yeah. Turn real quick to Isaiah chapter 24, maybe the last passage we look at. I'd like to conclude this thought, but Isaiah 24, let's consider a couple of verses there. Isaiah chapter 24, let's look at verses 21 and 22. Isaiah writes, it will happen in that day that the Lord will punish the host of heaven on high and the kings of the earth on the earth. So you've got this punishment of these spiritual beings and the punishment of these physical beings. The hosts of heaven, the kings of the earth, they will be gathered together like prisoners in the dungeon and will be confined in prison, and after many days they'll be punished. There seems to be this relationship between these wicked spiritual beings, like I think we're going to see here, the prince of Persia, the prince of Greece, who seem to be using their spiritual influence to affect physical rulers. And you see God saying, well, I'm going to punish both the physical rulers and those spiritual influences as well. They're going to be punished together. They're going to be cast down together. And you think about how Satan's worked through the years. When he's wanted to persecute God's people, he did it with the Babylonians. It's something God allowed, but perhaps there were things at work that wanted to, who were against the purposes of God and the desires of God. And so, as we see with God using the Babylonians and with God using the Greeks and with God using the Romans ultimately to punish and persecute, that these spiritual beings are using these wicked rulers. You think of people like Antiochus Epiphanes, or you think of people like the wicked emperor from the Revelation that we read about that harasses God's people and punishes them. You think about the spiritual influences that might be behind that persecution. There seems to be somewhat of a relationship between the two. As we've seen, not only for the bad, but for the good, this angel says, I went and I strengthened Darius the Mede to accomplish the purposes of God. And in the same way, negative spiritual influences are affecting these physical rulers as well. And so we see these governing angels of Greece, of Persia, and Israel. It's very limited in what's revealed to us here. We're not told how this influence takes place, and we rarely are told when it takes place. We're simply told that it does take place. And so this prince of Persia withstood this angel that was seeking to reveal this revelation to Daniel. And ultimately, as a result of this angel withholding whoever it is that's bringing Daniel this vision, Michael steps in, Michael intervenes. Michael, who is referred to as the Prince of Israel, that is, and we know Michael, you go and you read about him, he's the one that cast Satan out of heaven in Revelation 12. Michael went and he freed this angel that was the Prince of Persia that was holding up this other angel so that he might go and he might deliver this vision to Daniel. So Daniel, upon hearing all of this information, once again, says there was no strength left in me nor any breath, and he faints again. The angel's going to touch him and wake him up again. Thoughts, comments, or questions on this passage up through verse 17? All right, well, we're out of time. We'll pick up with the rest of the chapter, verses 18, and we will be looking at chapter 11 next week, so you may go ahead and read that in preparation for our study. So I thank everyone for their attention and participation this morning.